Chapter 30. The 21st of September, 1838, was a day of desolation for me. I received a letter of my bishop appointing me curate of Beauport. That parish was justly considered the very nest of the drunkards of Canada. The natural resources of that parish were extraordinary. Yet the people of Beauport were among the poorest and most wretched people of Canada, for almost every cent they earned went into the hands of the saloon keepers. How many times I heard them fill the air with their cries and blasphemies, and saw the streets reddened with their blood when fighting with one another like mad dogs. The Reverend Mr. Gagan, who was their curate since 1825, had accepted the moral principles of the great Roman Catholic theologian Liguori, who says that a man is not guilty of the sin of drunkenness so long as he can distinguish between a small pin and a load of hay. I immediately went to the palace to persuade his lordship to select another priest for Beauport. He listened to my arguments and answered, "My dear Mr. Chiniki, you forget that implicit and perfect obedience to his superiors is the virtue of a good priest. Your obstinate resistance to your superiors is one of your weak points. If you continue to follow your own mind rather than obey those whom God has chosen to guide you, I really fear for your future. Your name is entered in our official registers as the curate of Beauport. It will remain there till I change my mind. I saw there was no help. I had to obey. My predecessor was selling all his furniture before taking charge of his distant parish. He kindly invited me to go and buy, on long credit, what I wished for my own use. The whole parish was there long before me, partly to show their friendly sympathy for their last pastor, and partly to see their new curate. My small stature and leanness cut a poor figure by the side of my tall and jolly predecessor. He is hardly bigger than my tobacco box," said one not far from me. "I think I could put him in my vest pocket." "Has he not the appearance of a salted sardine?" whispered a woman to her neighbor, with a hearty laugh. After a couple of hours, a large cloth was suddenly removed from a long table, presenting an incredible number of wine and beer glasses, empty decanters and bottles. This brought a burst of laughter and clapping from almost everyone. All eyes were turned towards me, and I heard from hundreds of lips, "This is for you, Mr. Chiniki." I instantly answered, "I do not come to Beauport to buy wine glasses and bottles, but to break them." These words fell upon their ears as a spark into gunpowder. A deluge of insults and cursings overwhelmed me, and I soon saw that the best thing I could do was to leave. I immediately returned to the bishop's palace to try and change his mind. I told him what had occurred, stating, "I feel that I have neither the morale or the physical power to do any good there." "I differ with you," replied the bishop. "Evidently the people wanted to try your mettle by inviting you to buy those glasses, and you would have lost had you yielded to their desire. You are just what the people of Beauport want. You took them by surprise with your bold rebuke. Believe me, they will bless you. If, by the grace of God, you fulfill your prophecy, though it will be a miracle if you succeed in making the people of Beauport sober." Next Sunday was a splendid day, and the church of Beauport was filled. My first sermon was on the text, "Woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel," 1 Corinthians 9:16. With a voice many times suffocated by sobs, I explained some of the awful responsibilities of a pastor. The effect of the sermon was felt to the last day of my priestly ministry in Beauport. After the sermon, I told him, "I have a favor to ask of you. I have just given you some of the duties of your poor young curate towards you. I want you to return this afternoon at 2:30 that I may teach you some of your duties towards your pastor." At the appointed hour, the church was even more crowded. The text was, "When he, the shepherd, putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice." John 10:4. My intentions were to keep my people away from the taverns the greater part of the Sabbath, and to press on their minds the great saving truths by presenting them twice on the same day under different aspects. I continued the practice during the 4 years I remained in Beauport. I had not been more than 3 months at the head of that parish when I decided to form a temperance society on the same principles as Father Matthew in Ireland. First, I approached the bishop on the subject, but to my great dismay, he absolutely forbade me to even think about it. Preach against drunkenness, but let the respectable people who are not drunkards alone. St. Paul advised his disciple Timothy to drink wine. Do not try to be more zealous than the apostles. Next, I tried gaining support from the neighboring priests, but without a single exception, they laughed at me and forbade me to speak any more to them of giving up their social glass of wine. I was determined at any cost to form the Temperance Society, but was frightened by the idea not only of the wrath of the whole clergy, but of the ridicule of the whole country, which would overwhelm me in case of a failure. Perplexed, I decided to write to Father Matthew and ask his advice. That noble apostle of temperance answered, pressing me to begin the work immediately, relying on God without paying any attention to the opposition of man. I took his advice and began at once to prepare. Before starting, I prayed to God and all his saints almost day and night. I studied all the best books written in England, France, and USA on the subject, and I had taken a course in anatomy under the learned Dr. Douglas. At last, I felt ready for battle.